out there. Something that's pretty old hat out there amongst the United States.
Yes, yes.
So we really had a goal there. We wanted to start something up in order to better communications and kind of solidify Tacoma neighborhoods.
Right. Now, early on, you were kind of on the ground floor, were you not? You and Linda and Skip in kind of fashioning that proposal?
No. If you want to go back into Tacoma history, the ground floor was Steve Kirby.
Uh-huh.
And that was years and years ago. And then it kind of gotten, we ended up with a resolution for UNOT, and it never went any further than that for
yes.
one reason or the other. But I think the vision was always there. It got brought up again by myself at the first neighborhood summit.
Yes.
And that was in the neighborhood enhancement.
And weren't you facilitating that group?
No, I was just a participant.
I see.
Not a facilitator. And so that's where it initially got started, is one of the suggestions
uh-huh.
that group put together and kind of threw forth toward to the administration at that point.
Right.
And then from there it went down into the books, and then there were people that were pretty much chosen for one reason or another to head that up that really didn't have a lot to do with that vision.
Yes.
And so the UNOT began to put together their own proposal.
Now, how did that all, you were a player in that, were you not?
Yeah, that was something that I believe was voted on in the UNOT meeting. I mean, I don't have the meetings minutes or anything, but that was a discussion on the neighborhood councils, and it was kind of a follow-up. And so I think the committee that was chosen was, I think it was Linda and myself and Skip, and I don't remember who else was on the committee, but those were the key players because they're pretty much the people that participated the most.
And then that group fashioned that initial proposal. And as I recall, and again, you know, you're right, it was 2 years ago, and my memory's a bit dim too, but as I recollect what happened, you called me, I think, one evening and said, you know, we've got a proposal here that we think you should look at. And I think it was Skip that hand-delivered that to me and other members of the council. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I believe that was right. I think that's how it happened. I'm not quite sure. But I know that it went forward to the mayor's committee.
Yes.
From there. And then that's kind of where Skip was the designee, you know, to participate in that group, and it went forth from there. So.
Did you have any personal expectations or hopes, or were you mainly interested in just seeing the council address the issue, or did you have some particular issues that you wanted to see us address?
No, I want the issue of neighborhoods. I wanted to see the neighborhoods organizations that were out there become more communicative
uh-huh.
with each other.
Uh-huh.
And then, too, with that comes funding, and I wanted to see them become kind of, like I said, solidify. I really wanted to see those entities that were out there that to really become something.
Mm-hmm.
What it amounts to is that in Tacoma's history, we've had neighborhood groups come and go. And I think 90% of the time that they go, the reason why they go is because of funding. Just lack of funding, they lose lack of participation. You know, they've got great ideas and they can't put them forth because of the almighty dollar.
Mm-hmm.
It takes money to communicate throughout your neighborhood, and it's pretty tough to have that big of a phone tree. When I look at South End Neighbors for Family Safety, we had a 1,700 house count. So the Safe Streets idea of a phone tree, it really didn't fit for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there, you know, you just had to come up with better ways.
Yeah, and as we kind of move through that process, once Skip took with him the proposal that you and Linda and he had worked on, and as we began to work through the process, I expect that there were further discussions with UNOT as to what kind of progress we were making. Were you hopeful that we would be successful in our quest?
Oh, yeah. the way I looked at it, for Tacoma Theater, you had to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
It just had to. I mean, it just had to work. It had to go this time. It was a long time coming. It's something I think Tacoma needed for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And so Skip would come back and report to the UNOT board and, UNOT participants on the progress of, all the work that the mayor's committee, you included, did.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a lot of give and take there, and there was agreement and disagreement, but that's what, when you put forth any kind of document like that, that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Was there any discussion, do you recall, within the leadership of UNOT that got around to the point of saying, hey, this is about as far as we can go, we shouldn't go any further as far as compromise? Or was it kind of fluid? Did you always feel it was moving forward?
I thought it always moved forward.
Okay.
I don't recall anything like that.
You don't recall at any time during the UNOT meeting where Skip and you and others said, hey, wait a minute, this mayor's committee's giving up a little too much, or maybe we should reconsider our involvement? Or was there generally pretty positive discussion about how that all came about?
Oh, gosh, I think what the discussion exactly was. What sticks out in my mind is the main concern about some of the wordsmithing that was going on.
Yeah.
And the concern was that all organizations be open to this and that no one particular, organization be kind of pinpointed,
mm-hmm.
other than UNOT, because we only looked at ourselves as an umbrella organization for the 501c3 status type thing, and, the resolution was already there, and say Streets already had its own funding, so they weren't really, didn't really need to be involved as far as, that goes. So, I don't know, that's about all I remember, was the big concern about some of the language was kind of going to the far left,
mm-hmm.
you might say.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, it depends upon your political values,
yeah.
as to whether it's...
You know what I'm saying? I just
yeah.
don't know how to put it any better, but you know exactly what went on.
Maybe going off into left field would be a better way of characterizing.
Yeah, there was some concern there about keeping it very general.
Now,
for the future.
Yeah, I know that one of the... when in our early conversations, and Skip was trying to rack his memory, too, about this, in some of our early discussions, and you and I talked about this, UNOT, and I know you and Linda and Skip were very anxious that we on the council get copies of this proposal. And as a matter of fact, I recollect you at one point said, Bill, you've got to take a look at this, you've got to read this before you move forward. And my sense of memory was that was before we got into the actual task force. But was there something else coming up on the agenda that you were concerned about that necessitated that we take a look at this proposed ordinance from UNOT that you can recollect, or was it just...
I can't remember real well, but it seems like there was something once upon a time, there was a little faction of the council that was trying to more or less abolish UNOT.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that there may have been at least that feeling among some of the UNOT people.
Well, no, there was an ordinance or revolution or something up.
Uh-huh.
That would have, in so many words, in fact, in the right words, kind of dissolved UNOT. It overrode the original resolution or something. And Anita Preston attended that. I remember that.
Oh, yes.
Anita Preston attended that council meeting. I think Skip did, too.
Yes. Yeah.
On behalf of UNOT, because in... As far as the words of the ordinance or resolution goes, and I'm sure it had to have been an ordinance, it would have effectively abolished UNOT.
Yeah, you're right. In fact, the idea was that UNOT would be phased out and be replaced by the community council, but as it turns out, UNOT is still around, as is the community council, so...
Yeah, our whole idea and vision, I think, initially was that harmony.
Yeah.
Was that type of harmony that, UNOT would always be there, and this was just going to, in a lot of ways enhance UNOT, and UNOT would enhance Tacoma and the neighborhoods, and there was no, some people I know had interpreted as a big powerful thing and a threat, and that wasn't the initial vision.
Yeah, Yeah, well, of course, needless to say, there are a lot of people on city staff who were very fearful of this whole exercise.
Department heads,
I mean, I've got the memos. You would not believe the fear that was in their hearts.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to switch you back onto the regular telephone. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I'm going to switch off the speakerphone, and unless there's something else you'd like to add, I think I've pretty much covered everything that you can remember. Yeah, yeah. How are you doing?
Now we're on. I thought maybe we could just kind of start the discussion with you maybe just kind of sharing some of your impressions as to what was going on, kind of your feelings about what was happening, your perceptions, impressions, and so on, and we can kind of begin the discussion there.
Well, it was interesting in the very beginning watching the dynamics of what was going on. Mm-hmm. Clearly, there was a strong push by certain individuals within the UNOT group for what appeared to be a much more extensive neighborhood council program than what actually came out. I think some of the biggest concerns that I was seeing at that time were related to proposals that UNOT was putting forward to take over a lot of the role and duties of the council as it came to land use decisions, and creating what essentially started to appear to be an additional layer of government.
Mm-hmm. Hold on a second, could you? Just
sure.
A sec. Go ahead.
Sure. So it was finding that balance that was going to be the saving grace of the system. I think listening to some of the concerns and complaints of certain council members and certainly some of the staff is there was a fear of duplication of efforts, of the council being put in a position where it was handing over substantially decision-making power to non-elected individuals. And concern that the council would find itself put in a position where decisions that were passed on from neighborhood councils could not be necessarily taken as advisory because of the amount of power that had been handed off. It would be very difficult to go against those neighborhood decisions. I think that what ended up coming out was an outstanding repackaging of the proposal to create an empowered neighborhood council that drew out the best in terms of involvement from the neighborhoods and the citizens, but allowed for a kind of a transition time where they could get on their feet, they could get up and start understanding what it is as neighborhood councils they can do. Kind of an empowerment that allowed them to somewhat dictate where they started taking them, but within constraints that didn't jump them so quickly to a position where we had layered the government and distanced people from being able to access the council.
Mm-hmm. Early on, I was called, and I think all the members of the council were called by members of UNOT. And as I recollect, we all received copies of that initial ordinance. In fact, I think it was hand-delivered at our homes.
Yeah.
As I remember, and I don't remember whether that occurred at the time that we first began meeting as a task force or before that time, but there were conversations that went on. I suspect you were called by representatives of UNOT, and you got that package at the doorstep. How did you feel about that?
Well, I wasn't real clear as to the negotiation process going on at first. There was some very intense lobbying, what I felt like very intense lobbying in the very front, to accept the original ordinance as it was written, and anything short of outright support for this ordinance was tantamount to mutiny against the citizens of Tacoma. I mean, there was a lot of pressure put on by a few, and I want to stress a few of the UNOT members who had tremendous ownership of the original proposal. That, I would say, fairly quickly dissolved.
Mm-hmm.
Once the task force started meeting and discussing and reviewing some of the concerns and starting the repackaging, a lot of the pressure for acceptance of the first proposal started to dissolve.
Mm-hmm.
There was far more of a willingness for, or at least an understanding that there was a need to negotiate a compromise. There were still some very strong feelings on certain portions of it,
mm-hmm.
and I recall receiving phone calls later in the process trying to lobby me to push for certain aspects to stay in,
mm-hmm.
Specifically related to land use actions and the control that the neighborhood councils would have mm-hmm. over the land use action portions. But I would say in the latter stages of the task force work, all of that disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
The attitude changed drastically. Mm-hmm. The messages that started coming out were not ones of this is what has to go through, but boy, it's starting to look better and better all the mm-hmm. time.
Did you also sense this from staff too? Because you mentioned that you sensed an unease on the part of some staff people.
I never got to the point where staff started saying, oh, this is looking really good.
Mm-hmm.
Staff objections just kind of dissolved.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they started to feel more comfortable with the proposal or whether they just started to see the inevitability of the proposal, mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But the objections dissolved and weren't heard.
Were there any people from staff that talked to you directly? I'm thinking one person in particular.
I had a conversation with Walton, but I think I generated that.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with Barker, but again, I that was questions I generated. And I had a conversation with Elton, and I think he's the one who came forward to me on that one.
Mm-hmm. So just Elton, Jim, and Bill, which would be normal.
Yeah.
Kevin Haggerty didn't talk to you.
Oh, no. No.
Okay.
Never talked to Kevin.
I asked that because...
Well, I think I recall an offhand comment at some place where I ran into Kevin about the disastrous nature of neighborhood councils and the doom and gloom that they will bring about.
Yeah.
But it was more of an offhand comment because I didn't allow him to get into any further.
Because he was the most passionate, I think, and some of his memos and his concerns. Now, I'm going to talk to Hal about this because I think he and Hal have always been very close. And
very
my hunch
close.
Is that there was... what about conversations with some of your colleagues? Here I was deeply involved and focused in what was going on with the task force and would from time to time talk to individual council members about their concerns, but was there any kind of...
Well, I clearly had conversations with Hal.
Mm-hmm.
His concerns expressed to me were he viewed this as... in very large measure as just a way to get in the way of mm-hmm. of people doing what they want to do with their land.
Mm-hmm.
He was very much focused on the extra layer of steps that would be required in land use actions, that we would be empowering opponents to anything going on in the city and what impact that would have on economic development. And I shared some of those concerns mm-hmm. With the first proposal,
mm-hmm.
but as the task force modified, those all disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
The same structure was not in place to bog down the process and add the layers. And so it became less of a layering as it was just an involvement process.
Mm-hmm.
Conversations with Karen. Depends on if you're going to use real names.
Yeah.
Karen could have cared less about the specifics.
Yeah.
she just outright supported the proposal because of what she sensed as it being a good political issue.
Yeah.
And I tried to get any depth on that, and there just wasn't any.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much, she would, you know, in my conversation with her, I think she would probably agree in general with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, she wanted the job to get done.
Mm-hmm.
There were some issues within the proposal that she was concerned about. I don't know whether they were brought to her attention by staff people, by Barker or Walton, perhaps. There were some areas.
She never expressed a concern or a
yeah.
reservation at all.
Yeah.
It was just, it was 100% full throttle. And,
yeah.
Who cares about the details on
yeah.
it? And
So you, Hal initiated conversation. Obviously,
yes.
Hal was looking to see if there were five votes, I suspect.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. He was trying to line up opposition, and I don't think he got anywhere.
Yeah.
Well,
I, you know, my feeling is if that original proposal had reached the table and had moved forward, yeah. I couldn't have gotten five votes.
No.
And I mentioned that to Skip.
I think you're correct.
You know, there's. Now, with this council, I don't know, possibly, but the other council, it was, I just don't, I mean, it was, there were a lot of, I would say that there were some people on the council, Hal in particular, Harold early on, who were opposed to the concept
mm-hmm.
for the reasons that you've suggested. I think they've kind of felt the same way in some respect. I talked to Harold this afternoon. There are some people who may have been somewhat ambivalent. Maybe you were somewhat ambivalent about, you weren't really quite certain as to what this all meant, and conceptually maybe it's okay. There are some people who embraced the idea but had problems with some of the key players like Bob Evans and the players in the UNOT that bothered him. And part of it was a safe street situation with Lyle.
Mm.
Karen, who I think, you know, and maybe Mike Lund, who would probably go along with something or might go along with something. And that was about it. I mean, as far as I could see, there were, and Karen said that in the end, she her desire was to see if she could get as many votes as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So as it turned out, we got probably eight out of the nine
right.
would have got along
right.
with it. Although you were in Vladivostok when we took that final vote. As we kind
was
of,
I?
Jeez, yeah,
I
you were.
I was there.
Yeah, I think you were. I think you and Silas were. But in any event.
Yeah. Well, clearly, I think I approached it from liking the idea, but being uncomfortable
yeah.
with some of the provisions in the first proposal. Specifically, the provisions related to land use decisions and having to go through the hearings process with the neighborhood councils before you ever brought the thing forward to the hearings examiner or to the council. There were some very uncomfortable proposals that were being thrown around that were both within the original agreement but were allowed by the agreement,
mm-hmm.
by the broad nature of it, and would have been put in place, I think, over time. But that was all resolved.
Yeah.
There was certainly some discomfort with the potential for what was seemed to be being structured as a channeling of comments that citizens
yeah.
would go and communicate to the neighborhood councils, and the neighborhood councils would bring those concerns forward to the council, rather than continuing to allow total open access to the
mm-hmm.
council by any citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that was resolved.
Yeah, that was. And then as we move through the process, another issue began to, and this was an issue, underlying issue throughout in our task force discussions, and this one that you and I talked about, and I talked with other, Dolores Silas had some of the concerns, as did Harold, and that is, you know, what do we mean when we talk about neighborhood councils, and what kind of leadership do we want to see emerge from neighborhood councils, and who are the real stakeholders? And the UNOT position was, as you recall, that they should be resident registered voters. In fact, Skip's vision of the neighborhood council was that the people that would serve on the board would be elected along with city council members during regular municipal elections, which is an interesting idea. and so you had that model on one hand, which is kind of a mini city council with mini city city halls.
Almost.
Yeah. Thomas Jefferson's Ward Republics carried to the nth degree. You had that view, and then you had Lyle Kwasim's vision of neighborhood councils, which was more of a pattern after Safe Streets and their community organizing, where anybody who lived in an area and had a stake in that area, or anyone who was in that area by virtue of residence or business or ownership of property, or people even worked in the area. It didn't make a difference whether a person was a citizen, a registered voter, or what, or even a, damn it, as he said, even a convicted felon. He didn't care. That everyone should have, everyone does have a stake and should be involved in the process. So you had these two models of what a neighborhood council would be, and that was a philosophical debate that continued throughout the process until the very, very end. And I know that you were concerned about that, and you might want to talk a little bit about your concern.
I guess I had two clear desires in terms of membership. I knew that residents would be well represented both in the overall membership but access to the board as well. But clearly I wanted to make sure that provision for youths was there, that it wasn't necessarily that they would have representation on the board, but that in terms of voice and involvement and membership, that we didn't exclude and make this close out a voice that is very important within our neighborhoods and can go a long ways in solving a lot of the problems. And secondly, that people who had a financial stake, a business owner and the property owner in the neighborhood should be able to have just as much access and just as much voice as residents, that they have is just as big a stake and have just as much to risk based on the success or failure of their neighborhood, and therefore should be just as involved, and that we shouldn't close the door out on those people either.
You know, it's interesting you mention that, because you know I think you're absolutely right, and I had a long talk with Skip about this, because you know, he felt very strongly contrary. He had another view, and it's kind of wrapped up in his philosophy and the way in which he sees things too. But I said to him, and you just made the point, I said, you know, when it really gets down to it, in the end, when there are those community meetings that will lead to leadership and the creation of boards, don't you really think that most of those people are going to be residents? I mean, they're not going to be the Burger King employee. Now, there may be some employees that would be interested in it, maybe a few, some property owners and some developers that would be interested in what goes on. But in the end, the people that will really be involved will be the residents. And so there's kind of a red herring here when you talk about having to exclude all these people. Sure. I don't think it's really that big a problem.
No, I don't think it is either. And I don't think you want to. I mean, you take something like the Proctor District. I can't imagine the North End being able to address all of the concerns that affect that neighborhood without involving the Proctor merchants, and particularly Bill Evans, who's probably been a bigger moving force for positive change in that area than anybody.
Right.
And why indicate that those people are excluded?
Yeah.
And so the compromise that came out, I thought, was very well, that youths and workers and anybody involved in the neighborhood can come and have a voice in the neighborhood council, but in terms of board representation, you had to either be a resident or a business owner, a property owner in the area. Because whether you live there or whether you own property there or you own a business there, you're impacted by what goes on there and should have
interestingly equal enough. Voice. Interestingly enough, it's even more open than what you think, because it. It says in there that a majority of a board must be residents, and that the bylaws can provide for seats for others, but anybody could be conceivably elected as long as they're 18 years old.
Right.
But a majority has to be. If you have a 7-member board, for example, 4 would have to. Now, some of these boards are like 23 people.
Right.
As it turns out, most, if not all, of the board members are residents.
Sure.
But
because those are the ones who are going to
be. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the developers and the business owners aren't objecting. But I got calls about that. And it became kind of a symbolic issue more than anything else right there at the end. And I had to find a way of of convincing Vaughn to stay involved, because I didn't want him going out
right.
campaigning against it or speaking against it or trying to fight the issue. So the compromise was the majority Shelby mm-hmm. residents. Now, at the
and I guess I would add that I think what was extremely important about that is the health of the neighborhood becomes dependent on communication both directions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if proposals are coming forward, whether it's deemed to be in the neighborhood's best interest or the resident's best interest, but not the business or vice versa,
mm-hmm.
the ability to have the viewpoints of both sides mm-hmm. present in communicating and the ability to have both sides hear the other side's mm-hmm. viewpoints can be very critical in resolving mm-hmm. issues within the neighborhood.
And to send a message that we're being inclusive.
Right.
Rather than having the language in there that said expressly said that
we're excluded.
You can come and talk, but you can't vote.
That's right.
And you can come and talk, but you can't serve on the board.
That's right.
You know, which is saying in essence, hey, the door slammed.
That's right.
So to speak. Now,
it'd be the same thing if we were to start to make the distinction between, well, if you own your home, you can come and serve on this board, but if you live in an apartment, you can't be on the
yeah.
board. I mean, you start to be exclusive and you start to close doors, and suddenly we've gone the opposite direction
yeah.
from what we wanted to do in involving everything.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. As I say, a lot of it was symbolism
mm-hmm.
and the kind of message that we're sending out. On the other hand, as you can imagine, I had to find some way of resolving the issue in a way that Skip and the UNOP people would feel that they were being heard too, and that
Absolutely.
Was kind of the compromise.
Sure.
Now at the end, you and I had a lot of conversations mm-hmm. about this whole issue, and we were trying to work it. And I was trying to temper some of the concerns that came from you and Harold and Dolores in particular,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time trying to keep